Maggie's handing out sandwiches. You know Jim's on that bus.
Everybody, we're Sorkin in it. Watching the newsroom, please take just a minute. It's a podcast. Aaron Sorkin might choose about Will and Mackenzie making the news. You're Sorkin in it. 9 episodes later, we have reached the season finale of season one of The Newsroom, which of course is season two of Sorkin in It. I'm Lex Friedman.
Hey, I'm Brian Warren.
Brian, we have done it. We have reached season one, episode 10, The Greater Fool, the season finale. What the heck happened in this episode? Do you mind reminding me?
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, we had to wrap up a lot of storylines, or at least try to wrap up a bunch of them. Season one wraps up with Will in the hospital for a bleeding ulcer. We spend a lot of time on that, but there are plenty of other things going on too. The story about the NSA whistleblower develops a whole bunch with Will, Mac, and Charlie confronting Reese and Leona. But we also have a Jim, Maggie, Don, Lisa, Sloan, even in various stages of this romantic entanglement.
A love dodecahedron.
I was going to say a love pentagram, but that sounds awful. So. And plenty of other things too, but like the big key things happening are the whistleblower stuff and the romance stuff. We'll get into all that. So what did you think, Lex? How did this go for you?
There were pieces I liked, Brian, but I did not love this season finale. I thought it was a weak episode overall with some great segments. That was my overall take. What was your gut reaction?
My gut reaction walking away from it is I was kind of unsatisfied.
Your bleeding ulcer reaction.
I too liked some pieces of it, and I kind of liked the messing with time that Aaron Sorkin does quite often, and that was a fun device for this particular episode, and I think it was pretty effective. But yeah, and there were a couple conversations I quite liked, but in the end I left kind of unsatisfied.
Yeah, let's dive in. I think that we're gonna feel similarly about this.
Okay.
Maybe we'll have different scenes that we liked. Maybe we'll make each other like more scenes. More or less, mm-hmm. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But I like when episodes, and it's rare, I like when episodes start with the in-show broadcast. And I can't say exactly why, but I do like that. And that's what happened this time. So I liked it. Like, the news show is the most important part of these people's careers. And
sure.
When we're in it, I like that. And, you know, they're talking about stories that I remember from, you know, 2011, August 2011. But he's like, nope, we're not talking about S&P downgrading the United States' credit score. We're not talking about the Dow plummeting. We're talking about Dorothy Cooper. I'm like, Dorothy Cooper, I don't remember that, which is okay because she was, as it turns out, a fictional creation.
Yeah.
But so like you said, the very first thing that then we cut to is this 8 days earlier where we can't find Will. There's several of us looking for him in his apartment. And I like you said, Aaron messing with time, but also with like mystery. Because in the beginning, we don't know where Will is. They're looking in the apartment. We don't know what's going on. We don't know what the deal. Mm-hmm. Part of your brain, if you're, you know, actively watching, is like, he's clearly fine. This is 8 days ago from what we just saw.
Right.
And we know that he's on TV 8 days from now. So he cannot be in peril. But it's also like, now there's blood. And now there's, hey, we see the magazine article on the New Yorker and the cover says The Greater Fool. He's not going to like that, which is also the name of the episode. And then like, there's collapsed Will. And so, and like, I appreciate that in one sense, we've taken away some of the false drama of the moment. Like, he's going to be okay. Like, he's not dead.
Sure.
We've seen him 8 days from now. But also, like, what the hell happened and how did we get here? Like, I thought that part was handled well. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think...
And I really liked Terry Crews in the couple scenes.
Yeah. I think we're supposed to think that Will, like, hurt himself or something. Like, you're supposed to think initially when you see the blood or something and then he's collapsed in the bathroom, like, a little bit of a trope, but it's fine. And
yeah.
And we're saved from thinking that anything is really too perilous.
I liked Terry Crews in that scene. I liked that Terry Crews' character, Lonnie, instantly is calling 911. Like, that's all good. And then we get to the hospital and we meet, you know, generic doctor who was played by an actor who I've seen in a couple other things, Kenneth Troy.
Oh, really?
I thought the doctor was great. I really enjoyed his performance.
Is this the first time we hear Mac calling Will Billy? Yeah. Did that ever happen anywhere else? I don't remember.
No.
If it did.
I don't think we've heard that before. But that scene with... in the hospital is pretty interesting. That first scene in the hospital is the only hospital scene I really like. But it's interesting because, like, I like that Mackenzie is learning that Will has been hurting more than she realizes.
Mm-hmm.
And that Lonnie knows all these things.
Yeah.
And Lonnie just being matter of fact about it all, telling the doctor, no, he's taking this. It's like, I like that. I thought that scene really worked. And, mm-hmm. Should have just stopped watching right then. Because then, Brian, then we get to things I didn't like almost immediately. Will, how do you feel about Will talking about his Republicanism during his nightly news broadcast? I thought that felt really weird.
It, because it got dragged out for the whole hour that we watched, it felt like we were kind of belaboring it over and over and over, where he just keeps talking about how he's a Republican, and that didn't seem very fair or like useful for the conversation. He's been spending months talking about how Republicans don't really live up to their ideals. The fact that he's talking about like how he's almost like taking it personally seems less newsy to me.
And, I don't know, like, yeah, maybe on Fox News you know what everybody's political bent is, but yeah, like, I don't necessarily know what, I don't know, Katie Couric's political ideology is, or Edward R. Murrow's political ideology was. Like, it's not his job to do that. And I think it's fine for him to publicly be a Republican, but maybe not on his news broadcast where he's supposed to be, you know, here's your unbiased news reporting. It felt weird to me.
Yeah, it starts to feel petty when he's making it personal, whereas he could just say, he could leave that part out of it and it would be making just as good of a point.
Yeah, I think that's right. Mackenzie is totally unlikable in every hospital scene in this episode. I really don't like her beating Will up in the hospital. Like, like the guy is recovering from some pretty serious thing, and she's like smacking him with a script or a magazine or whatever over and over again, and I hated it. I thought that it was like not how humans interact. And for a bit, I was struggling with the article. I was struggling with Will being beat up by the article, but then I decided that it made sense, right? That talent, whether it's news talent or like he was offered a late night hosting job, we know, like, he's an actor at the end of the day, he's talent.
Yeah,
and being affected by a negative review or a hatchet job, whatever, like, I that seems reasonable to me, even though I was initially surprised by it. But I was curious, how did you feel about Will really being defeated by this crappy article?
It's not super surprising. Like, the way that we leave Brian by the end of, I guess it was the end of this last episode, where Will just tells him, write whatever you want to write. Will's just not like being super crazy successful in his work, I suppose. So the idea that the article's about him shooting high and not nailing it, I suppose that's fine. I wouldn't have expected Brian to come back with like a, some sort of thing about how Will just is totally crushing it. So yeah, I'm not surprised at all. It's also like a pretty effective plot device too. So yeah,
absolutely. And then, like, Aaron intentionally, I think, takes away the drama of, is Will going to be okay, since we've seen that he's broadcasting 8 days later.
Mm-hmm.
But then in the hospital, it's like, I don't think I'm coming back. And we get the dramatic sting of music. Like, I don't think I'm going back to the news. We know it's a TV show. We know you're going to do season two. Like, that part held no dramatic heft to me.
Well, we know he came back like 8 days later. We've already seen it. So
yeah.
Is the whole thing about us trying to see like who talked him into coming back?
It didn't play that way to me. It just felt like, I don't know, it did not ring true to me. I find Nina almost impenetrable in this episode, understanding her motivations and desires, giving her a little bit of extra humanity, maybe. I don't even think it's true when she says that nobody ever grows up wanting to be a gossip columnist. I bet some people do grow up wanting to be a gossip columnist.
Sure.
And like, why is she warning Mackenzie? Like, now she's protecting Will after months or a year of going after both of them. Setting this whole thing in motion, I found odd.
I think if Nina's developing a conscience, she should do something with that conscience, because by her just approaching Mac to say, was Will high, for any listener, I guess, who doesn't remember this part, like, Will or Nina came to Mac and said, hey, I need to know if Will was high because I just got a source for this. Like, that's,
I have a single source saying he was high during the Osama assassination broadcast.
And so that conversation doesn't hold any meaning in that, like, what's Matt going to do? Say, yes, I'll be your second source? No, that's not what Nina's saying, because she's like, oh, I don't like some of the things I've done to Will and you, but I'm also like reporting this story and I'm probably going to end up doing it.
Right. If I get another source, I'm going to report it. So be aware. Like, it's another example of Aaron making a villain and then trying to say, hey, maybe this villain is more human than that. And like, okay, people contain nuances, but it's just, I'd rather see more of her development versus have her just tell me, hey, by the way, I'm slightly better than I used to be.
Yeah.
Then we get to one of the most somewhere, not jarring, but surprising and also confusing moments to me in the episode. We get to the scene with Sloan and Don, the first scene with Sloan and Don.
Yep.
And the big reveal in this scene is that Sloan acknowledges or says she's single because Don never asked her out, which, by the way, is a very male-centric line to have written. Like, that's maybe why she's single now. Or really what she's saying is, hey, I wish you would have asked me out at some point, Don. But
yeah,
like, I'm single because you never asked me out is crazy. But anyway, it starts with this conversation where clearly Sloan's gone out to lunch about some job where, I guess, working for a VC firm where we later learn she could be making $4 million a year, whatever. And she's upset because Americans are still misunderstanding what it means to raise the debt ceiling, and that the percentage of Americans who think that that means that we borrowed more money is 42% before she started talking about it in the news, and it's still 42% now. And Don's like, hey, you don't know that you didn't make a difference. It could have been even higher than 42%. Like, it would have gone up had you not done this. And they have a really weird laugh, and I didn't get the laugh. Like, I got the laugh only later in the scene when Sloan's like, by the way, basically, she says, by the way, I have this huge crush on you, and I wish you would have asked me out. And then we get this whole essay on how Don's not a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody told you you're a bad guy, so you behave like you think a good guy should behave because you want to prove that you're not a bad guy, but you're not a bad guy. I think Sloan doesn't sound crazy, but I think she is totally fucking wrong and that Don is a bad guy. And I don't get what the point of, I mean, I don't get why she's saying those things. I don't get what evidence she has that Don is great.
I had to kind of zip it back because I was trying to jot it down and it made less sense the more I looked into it. The line, I don't know who told you a bad guy, but somebody did. That alone, great line. Like, that's fine. And if Don is kind of like under this perception that not living a true version of himself and that that's kind of making him self-sabotage or something, sure. But like the rest of it doesn't make a ton of sense. And so I expect her to like, the way I thought the conversation was going to go was she was going to say that to him and then he's going to realize, okay, I see. I really should just be honest with Maggie about my feelings and where I think that our relationship really is going. And so I'm going to let her not think that I'm pursuing her anymore and just stop this. And look, here's this other person who's kind of like really awkwardly trying to ask me out. And that's how I thought it was going to go. But it doesn't. It doesn't. Like, he never asked her out and he resolves to go not propose to Maggie. Really frustrating me.
We haven't seen why Sloan would find him attractive. Like, attractive as a personality to be attracted to. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this is wrong of me and I acknowledge that it's wrong, but it also beggars belief to me that the talent would ask out the staff. Like, I don't think that's how it goes. We do get one of the episode's highlights in the same scene, which is Jim comes in. Don doesn't even remember why he's called Jim in. And Jim hears from Don or from Sloan, I can't remember who, but he hears Don's going to ask Maggie to move in with him.
Yeah.
And I thought that John Gallagher Jr. does an incredible performance in that scene. It felt so real and human to me. His attempting to be totally chill about it.
That's
very obviously not chill about
great.
It.
Great. Good luck.
A +++.
Yeah.
Also, by the way, Sloan, I wrote this down. Sloan's dialogue makes her a worse person. Don't hit on someone else's boyfriend. Like, you can say, hey, I think you're with the wrong person. And hey, I think that you're, you know, if you were available, I'd be interested. But like, hitting on somebody else's boyfriend is over the line. I don't like Sloan's behavior. I love Jim's performance in that scene, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, Sloan's like a pretty like forward and awkward enough person that she would just totally ask somebody out.
Yeah. I'm with you. I'm trying to understand what a note is that I wrote down, which is great for Dan in the world. Maybe I meant Don in the world.
Oh, no, that's what Jim said. He said that's great for
about Don,
Maggie and Don and the world or something like that.
But, yes, yes.
I think it was when Jim went to go talk with Mackenzie in the hospital and Mackenzie's all.
And Mackenzie's totally unlikable in that scene in the hospital. Again, she yanks Will's pillow away from him, which again is not how humans behave with a person in the hospital, a person you care about. And then she's like yelling at,
calling him a hollowed out shell of a man.
And like he's dead and whatever. And I, the most unlikable Mackenzie he's ever been. And, you know, I thought that Jim was acting his stuff. Honestly, I liked Will in those scenes where he's like, go back to work. And Jim's like, I'm going. And he's like, no, I meant her. Like, I liked all that stuff. Good.
Mm-hmm.
But I kept saying, you know, things in this episode felt very telegraphed to me. Not Solomon Hancock killing himself. That one took me by surprise.
Yeah. I think I said I was surprised out loud when I watched that by myself.
When Jim comes in and says, like, I've terrible news or horrible news or something, and Charlie's like, you know, I've had plenty. I don't know that I need. Doesn't even say I have to tell you. I know, he just knows he has to tell him. I was really surprised that Solomon Hancock.
I know that the Solomon and Charlie scene earlier in the show was I liked that scene. And I had paused my computer and come back later, and then I just the and I leave the sub. The subtitles on, or the, it just said beef stew, you like it. Was sitting there right when I came back, and I wanted to screen capture that one. That was lovely.
The beef stew dialogue felt very Sorkin-y. Mm-hmm. The non sequiturness of it, the detail of the conversation, then obviously him talk Solomon talking about his kids and how rarely he gets to see them or whatever, and then I think as almost always, Charlie impeccable in this episode.
Yeah.
I loved his scene. Like, I empathize with both of them. When Charlie's telling Solomon, like, you're an unreliable witness, and Solomon's like, I'm a human who's, like, lived things, but, like, who told them that I was demoted or lost my security clearance, whatever? Like, it's coming from them because they want to discredit me. It's punishment, whatever. And Charlie's like, yeah, but I can't use you. I'm going to keep working on it. But tell me what happened with TMI. Like, give me the TMI details because you know that I'm trying. And he's like, no, that's not how it works. And then she hears from Jim that the guy's killed himself, and Charlie has this line, like, Charlie's emotional and he's turned away and he says, call your parents once in a while, it's really not that hard. And with no context for Jim again, but yeah, like, we know the context, and we don't know, we can only guess at why Solomon Hancock actually killed himself. I don't think it's explicitly because his kids didn't call enough, but I appreciated what Charlie was saying. I read it in multiple ways, like emotion and sadness, his own guilt, and also like wanting to push some of his guilt away, like, mm-hmm, maybe it's more that, mm-hmm, thing, whatever. But I thought it all played really well.
Yeah. Again, we've known this from the pilot that Charlie is incredible, and it's lovely to see that here we are 10 episodes later, and he is just in. There's been a couple times we had a couple bones to pick, yes, with him calling Sloan girl and stuff, but right, but mostly great,
doubling down,
and pretty well written.
And so here I had, and we'll do spoilers for the end of the episode because we know that you've watched it too, but Carol's like, oh, come on. As soon as he's getting that message or envelope, before we even see the return address, like, we know, at least I knew, hey, that's going to be the from him, and it's going to be the expose on TMI. Like, that's what you need.
Sure.
And then the return envelope saying whatever it said, the
East River.
Body of water. East River. And then it turns out that I've been tricked once again by Aaron, mm-hmm, Sorkin, and that's not what's in there, and that it is the recipe. Loved it. Because I, yep, was sure I knew what that envelope was. Couldn't believe Charlie didn't figure it out ahead of time. And then it wasn't even what it was.
Yeah. A little twist was love. That, I enjoyed that.
I was getting pretty mad. We're back at the hospital. And Will's like, what'd you do with that? Like, did you play my voicemail for anybody? Where, mm-hmm, he says, hey, this isn't because I'm high, but I love you.
Yeah.
And she's like, what voicemail? I'm like, how did he leave a message for the wrong person? Like, is this, this is just more dumbness on Sorkin characters? I was so mad. And then it turns out that's not what happened. Why the hackers would delete the voicemail from Mackenzie's phone is beyond me. That,
yeah,
only reveals that something fishy is happening. So I don't get it. But I liked Grumpy Nurse. I liked Grumpy Nurse being the impetus for Will coming back to work.
Yep.
Talking about her mom and voter ID laws. I hate the television trope and film trope, I guess, of people in hospital beds deciding they're done being in the hospital and ripping out their IVs. Don't rip out your IV. I liked at least that it hurt him.
Yeah.
But I imagine there's also blood spurting and grossness.
It's right,
and
like in the Band-Aid. Right in your arm. It's like designed to pump. Yeah, yeah. It's,
I hate it.
No good.
I hate it, and it happened, and I hate
it. Do you have a whatever thing is, if you see blood, you get woozy and stuff?
I do not look at blood.
Yeah. I don't mind needles.
Somewhere between woozy and disgusted.
Yeah. But I donate blood often enough that, like, I know what it feels like when that thing's in there, and then, like, whenever they pull it out, it hurts, and that's when a professional's doing it, and I don't like watching it, that part either. Horrible. So
we go back to the newsroom now, to the bullpen, I guess. They're working it because now Will's motivated because that cranky nurse's mom can't vote and he doesn't like it, and so they're working on the news story that we've already seen them doing in the beginning of the episode, and we see everybody working on the rundown.
Maggie's handing out sandwiches.
Two questions. Why is Maggie handing out the sandwiches? She's a producer. Not her job. There's a million other people
handing out sandwiches.
And number two, She throws Jim's sandwich at him. And at the time, like, Jim hasn't wronged her. Jim has only done everything that she's instructed Jim to do. I didn't like her being pissed at Jim in that moment. I was mad. She should be pissed at whoever made her hand out the sandwiches. That's not her freaking job. She's a producer. Oh, I was so mad for Maggie. Then I was mad at Maggie several seconds later. The Maggie scene with Lisa.
Oh, yeah.
I can't decide if I'm mad at how the scene was written or if I'm mad at Maggie in the scene. And it might be a little of each because it felt to me like that's not how friends are. Where she's like, yeah, he was. Don doesn't think that Jim was there to see you is weak. Like, say that you don't think so. Like, Don pointed out, or Don made me think, or Don wondered, and now I'm wondering. Like, putting it all on Don felt like a cop out. Telling your friend in a public place 2 months later, none of it. Like, and like going tit for tat on, like, Lisa is saying, hey, you deserve better. Don's not doing well by you. And she's like, yeah, but oh, never mind. Like, I hated her behavior. It felt like, I guess I was mad at both because it felt like not real to me, like not how friends would interact, especially friends who we've been shown have this closeness. And then, like, if it is how they're going to act, wow, Maggie super sucks. But what, am I off base here?
No, you're not. And this relationship, where a lot of, like, the Maggie-centric relationships have all been, has been really characterized by people being kind of like stuck in a situation and just kind of living with it, you know? And the idea that this is how it culminates to going past that, and like it should be in a more dramatic moment or something. And what's making Maggie at this point decide, like, okay, now I'm through living with it and now I'm going to confront it? She should confront it with Don. She should confront it with Jim, not Lisa. It makes no sense.
Yeah. It's wrong. And doing it because Lisa is rightly pointing out how crappy a boyfriend Don is.
Yeah.
Didn't like it. And then another very telegraphed moment. We see the Sex and the City bus. We had already heard about the Sex and the City bus.
You know Jim's on that bus.
We know Jim's on that bus. Like, I would have felt better about it if they showed us that Jim was on that bus. But they wait and reveal it. But, like, obviously you talked about the Sex and the City bus tour. Now we see the Sex and the City bus tour. I enjoyed her, Maggie, dissing Sex and the City and talking about how the most is on an HBO show where Sex and the City ran. Like, I enjoyed the cuteness of that. I did get a little bit caught up in the moment of Jim trying to race to find Maggie, missing Maggie, and then there is Maggie. Turns around and there she is. But then I yelled at them. Kissing each other while they're in relationships with other people is crappy. Break up first.
Yeah.
Don't lose your best friend for a guy. I enjoyed the dialogue. You're with Don. I don't know if I want to be. And then we have Jim being too good a guy, in my opinion. If Don had committed to you, but he didn't. But if he had, well, then neither of us would be standing here. I wasn't even entirely sure what that meant. If Don had committed to me, then yes, I would forgive all of his flaws and faults, I guess. I don't know. There is the zag of, we see that they're finally, we're going to get this moment. We've been shipping them all this time, and now we're going to get to see Jim and Maggie together. And then Jim's like, well, no, you're with Don. And I happen to know that you don't know that Don is going to commit to you. It's a little heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking.
But I didn't like them kissing. They shouldn't kiss. They should almost kiss.
We want Jim and Maggie to end up together. It feels like here we are at the end of season one. This would be a great time for it all to work out. And so we're not going to do that now, which is fine. It's fine to leave that dangling for season two. Yeah. In the same way that this isn't the way that Maggie should confront her feelings for Jim by taking it out on Lisa, this isn't the way that, like, normal people would try to go ahead and end things with their current lovers and then get together with the right people. Like, it just felt so tropey. It also just felt a little lazy. But I did like the zag. I'll take that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you on that. So now we cut to, I guess, Leona's office or a conference room. I don't know what it is. But we've got Leona and Reese. We've got a very cocky Will McAvoy. And we've got Charlie McKenzie. My note is, I don't love Will being an asshole to Leona at the start of this meeting.
No.
He's making some comments about how great her body is, which is another classic Sorkin thing that people say to powerful women. And then talking about how she could do a tasteful Playboy spread, basically. And, like, that to me is overline. It's unnecessary. It's a bad look for Will. Even if he knows that he's going to emerge victorious in this meeting, he's got the goods and she doesn't know it yet, he can be an asshole in a different way. but like I'm not cool with the sexual harassment.
Also, they believe it's Reese that's the villain. They don't believe Leona's the villain. So like, why get on her bad side right now?
Yeah, yeah, great point. It's so lucky, I guess, that we have the NSA informant who's told us that this is what TMI is doing. But fine, okay, it's TV. I like Reese being true to himself and not even being apologetic.
Yeah,
like yeah, he's like, no, I didn't do that. What are you talking about? Yes, I did do it, and that's what we do. Like this is how tabloid TV mm-hmm. works, and it's what you wanted. And she's like, this is not what I wanted. I thought that he was true to himself. I thought that Leona was not. Like Leona has kind of an instant turn of, well, my son could have broken the law, or my son broke the law and could have gone to jail, and you are deciding not to expose that he has done this, even though you're news reporters. And so now I'm convinced that you should be doing a good job with the news, whatever. I don't, that part seemed a little too pat to me.
Mm-hmm. There was one cut that I really liked where Leona turns to Reese and says, like, you've been spying on them or something like that. And Reese at that point chooses to take a very long drink of water.
Yes.
that shot of him drinking the water, it was perfect. It may be the best shot in this particular episode yeah. because it is so freaking believable that I need something to do. I don't want to look at anybody right now. Yeah, there was a little bit of shame.
And it's a second to think. It's a second to think. You're right. It is a little bit of, you're right. It was beautifully executed, beautifully shot. I didn't write it down, but I did note it. I didn't write it down because I was so captivated by the moment. but I'm with you. I really did like that moment. I rewound it and watched it a second time. So then the conclusion is Leona says to Will, don't shoot and miss. And I'm like, okay. So okay. I guess what she's saying is you can go after the Tea Party, you can go after bullshit Republicans, even ones who are donors, but like if you're going to attack them, you got to emerge victorious in this. Mm-hmm. And then mm-hmm. McKenzie comes in and is an idiot. Well, he's not going to shoot and miss because he's like a shark. Like I saw where it was going. I didn't like that we constantly are belittling McKenzie, who is great.
Yeah.
But it was still funny.
That joke and then that, would be better if we didn't keep using it so much. Like,
yes. Well, very well said.
There's nothing wrong with it right there, but we've used it like so many times that she just ends up looking...
Or they have to do more to show her competence at other times. Like, it's just too much. But then we get that incredible reveal that I spoiled already, that inside the package is his recipe for beef stew inside the envelope.
Mm-hmm.
I loved that. Like, I loved... Obviously, they recorded the conversation. Of course they did. I had no problem with that. That's very TV-ish, but it's also they're reporters and they're getting a confession on tape. Great.
Also, they didn't have any evidence, so
yeah, this was bad. And they had no evidence.
It was more useful.
But man, oh man, that envelope containing nothing but the recipe is just beautiful. Then we finally get to a McKenzie moment I really love in this episode. She puts it together when she thought maybe the audio cut out. Hey, I never heard about the message I didn't get from Will.
Mm-hmm.
Will, what was on that message? He's ignoring her. She goes to his desk. It's 10 seconds back. She's leaning in. It's really cute. I think she's really cute in that moment. Like, what was the rest of the message? Because she kind of knows what the rest of the message mm-hmm, was, Brian. Mm-hmm. She kind of knows. And she's there. And now it's 2 seconds left. And when the show goes back on air, Will is still looking to where McKenzie would suggest and has to turn back to center, like on the broadcast. I loved all of that. I thought that was a really sweet and special moment.
Yep.
Then I really didn't like a lot of the rest, but I still like some things. So... Again, it's weird to me that now Leona's an ally because her son hacked them. I don't know. We hear that Sloan's going to stay at Newsnight, that she turned down $4 million a year. It made me wonder, what does she get paid to be a on-camera personality for ACN?
A lot less than that.
It can't be chump change. Like, she's not making $150,000 a year. Like, she's got to be making seven figures, I would assume, as an on-air personality. Maybe it's...
We know Will's the highest paid person. Is he the only one making seven figures?
I can't imagine he's the only one making seven figures. I think he's paid an obscene amount because he's the anchor. He's the face of it. But she's making at least a mil in my in my head canon. So $4 million is a lot more. I'll grant you. But I thought that was interesting. And then her conversation with Don of like, we're never going to look at each other again. And he's like, that's not realistic. And she's like, I'm not realistic. So starting now, don't talk to me. Like, I thought it was a well-performed scene. It's just so weird. Her crush on him and embarrassment, like, she doesn't strike me as a person who gets embarrassed. None of it worked for me.
Yeah.
Even though I liked the scene.
I was, I'll be honest, by this time, I was kind of like just tuning out because I was just like, I had so little interest in Sloan and Don's relationship by now.
And I think they're maybe going to end up together because I think at some point we have to get Jim with Maggie.
Yeah.
But then we have the season-long reveal. And I can't remember. Did we... We knew, as the viewers, that it was Mackenzie in the audience at Neil's thing. Right? We saw that in the pilot or later than the pilot?
I think it was right at the end of the pilot. He gets on the elevator and she looks down in her notebook and there it is.
Yeah. Okay.
Which apparently she doesn't go through very many legal pads.
She carried
every
that notebook around for 15 months and it still has empty pages and she can still flip right to those signs. Also, we should see that she always walks around with a giant Sharpie because that was a thick marker that she used to write that sign. Why does she always have that one? I like that they lean in. It's clear they're not going to kiss. Like, we know this is not building to a romantic moment. But him going really close in and then, why the fuck didn't you tell me? I love that. I thought that was
a good line.
And then Will's been seeing this woman who's waiting to apply for an internship job all day. First of all, why'd they make her wait all day? That seems crazy. That's like, I would not take that internship. Screw you. She's been waiting there for hours and hours. Like, why call her in the morning if you're not going to? Anyway, I was mad. But then he realizes, oh, that's the woman who asked the question. That's the student who asked the question that teed up all these things, whatever. And I could see where the scene was going to go. It was clear that we're going to hire this lady.
Yeah.
But I was still moved by it. I felt like it was obvious.
You were?
And then he goes, hire her. And I was like, oh, I felt it. And I really liked it. And I was mad at myself for liking it, but I was moved. I loved it.
When he said, she's the kid at the end of Camelot, that kind of got me. I was fine with it.
The reason it didn't get me is because I don't know the Camelot story well enough to understand all the references they're making to Camelot. Like, that's references that are just, I'm missing left and right.
Me neither. But he telegraphed it. Earlier, it was like the kid at the end. Yeah.
And my other note that I wrote was not necessarily in a bad way, but this episode feels really long. Like, it felt like, I guess maybe because so much happened, it felt long. It was, you know, a little bit more than an hour, which is long for the newsroom, but it felt really long to me. It felt like movie length.
It did. It did feel like kind of like we were trying to wrap a whole bunch of stuff up, which obviously we were. You know, like Aaron Sorkin had some stuff to check off his list for this one, and we had to check them all off. And there's some stuff that got too long. As I scroll back, like the whole thing with Maggie ranting about Sex and the City and that whole stuff just went on a little too long. All the stuff with Sloan and Don didn't really need to be there. Like, we could have tightened this up for sure, but we're at the end of the season.
I'll tell you, and we've been telegraphing this for a couple of weeks, I think, on the podcast. I'm really excited to see how season two goes.
Yeah.
I was hoping for more from the season finale, but like in my memory, and this is a knowable fact that I haven't checked, in my memory, there was a decent gap between season one and season two. Mm. And like I've said to you before, I believe that this show was written in a batch because I think they filmed them all before they started airing them for season one. So now is the first time in season two that we're going to see how does Aaron Sorkin incorporate feedback from fans and critics alike of like, hey, this stuff is good and this stuff isn't good. Maybe he ignores it all. Maybe it's just exactly the same show. But my hunch is it comes back stronger, or I'd like to believe that it comes back stronger. So I'm really excited to watch the next episode because I keep being disappointed and I would like to not be disappointed anymore. I would like there to be a reason we're doing this fucking podcast.
I don't think we should give up, Lex. I think we should stick with it.
The reason is I get to hang out with you, Brian. That's what it is.
Aw. What other shows can we point to where he has incorporated feedback partway through? This has been something you've been saying. Absolutely, it's gonna happen. So, listener, trust us. Episode one of season two is going to be dynamite. But I'm trying to think.
Have I said that? Have I said that?
Lex gave you the guarantee that this is going to be great.
I don't know if there is any example I can give of that. I feel like The West Wing, he was famously writing by the seat of his pants, right? He had to just keep going, but that meant that he was in the real world while it was happening. So he could see like, hey, people are responding to how Josh and Donna have this chemistry. Let's do more.
Exactly.
Also, he saw it. He's aware of it. He's not dumb, but like he can see that it's resonating. He can see, hey, when this is airing, it's working. But I think when you've written the whole thing before they start shooting, it's different. You don't get some of that thing. Like I watched the post show thing because you always watch them and I don't watch them than I have. But Sorkin was talking about how he thinks that Sloan and Don are a good match for each other. I'm like, I don't, but okay.
He can see chemistry. He can see the way that a line comes out of Jeff Daniels' mouth, or you can see, oh, you know, he's actually a little funnier than I was writing him towards the beginning or something. You can see some of that.
And so maybe we haven't exactly seen that he's done this before as much as I believe it could happen.
Sure.
So, but I really do have high hopes for season two. I was Googling when you answered that question. I found a clip from 8 years ago from the Today Show where the headline is Aaron Sorkin won't write for TV after Newsroom. So there might not be any more TV shows that he hasn't made that he will make.
I just want him to do another Sports Night.
West Wing reboot with President Charlie. Charlie from Newsroom, though. Well, listen, if you enjoy this podcast and you enjoy podcasting in general, then great job. And that's all we want you to do. But maybe here's the things you could do. Number one, go to your local Apple Podcast app and write a review.
Oh, we'd love that.
You can give us 5 stars. You can write a review, talk about how great we are. You can talk about how I'm like a hybrid between Brian and Dan Moore. Like whatever you want to cover, you can do. Number two, go to theincomparable.com/members. If you have some extra scratch and want to throw it the Incomparable's way, you can allocate some of those funds to us. It gives you access to bootlegs, bonus episodes, extra content, and it helps you support your favorite creators on the Incomparable Network, which is always very nice. And I think that's it. I think that's the extent of my instructions.
Well, I only have one thing to do, because in addition to everything you just said, and that's...
Is it watch season 2, episode 1 of The Newsroom?
You should do that in the next week, just so you can hear us talk about it next week. And I'm going to go ahead and do that.
Me too.
And then I think, Lex, you and I should both keep Sorkin in it.
I did not see that coming. You did not telegraph that like an Aaron Sorkin plot point.